സലബ്ധതൃണഭൂമിയാദേ അസംപ്യപ്രാപ്തവ്യ തൂനൃതഃ തവജ്ഞാനമിവാത്മാനം മന്യമാന ചൂകോപ അലബ്ധതൃണ ഭൂമി ആദി അസംപ്രാപ്യ അർഘ്യ സുനുനൃത അവജ്ഞാതമിവാത്മാനം മന്യമാന ചുകോപ അലബ്ധതൃണ ഭൂമി ആദി സംപ്രാപ്ത അർഘ്യ സുനൃത്ത അവജ്ഞാതമിവ ആത്മാനം മന്യമാനശ്ച ചുകോപ അലബ്ധതൃണഭൂമ്യാദി അസംപ്രാപ്തർഗ്യസുനിരൂത അവജ്ഞാതമിവ ആത്മാനം അലബ്ധതൃണഭൂമ്യാദി അസംപ്രാപ്തർഗ്യസുനിരൂത അവജ്ഞാതമിവ ആത്മാനം മന്യമാനശ്ച കോപഃ അസംതകാർഗ്യവൃത്തഃ അവജ്ഞാതമിവ ആത്മാനം മന്യമാനശ്ച കോപഃ മാതാജി word by word meaning alabdha having not received trina seat of straw bhumi place adihi and so on asamprapta not properly received arghya water for reception sunrutah sweet words avajnatam thus being neglected eva like that atmanam personally manyamanah thinking like that tukopa became angry her in that way Translation and purport by these divine grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. The king, not received by any formal welcome by means of being offered a seat, place, water and sweet addresses, considered himself neglected and so thinking he became angry. Purport. The law of reception in the codes of Vedic principles states that even if an enemy is received at home, he must be received with all respects. He should not be given a chance to understand that he has come into the house of an enemy. When Lord Krishna, accompanied by Arjuna and Bhima, approached Jarasandha in Magadha, the respectable enemies were given a royal reception by King Jarasandha. The guest enemy, namely Bhima, was to fight with Jarasandha, and yet they were given a grand reception. At night, they used to sit down together as friends and guests, and in the day, they used to fight, risking life and death. That was the law of reception. The reception law enjoins that a poor man who has nothing to offer his guest should be good enough to offer a straw mat for sitting, a glass of water for drinking, and some sweet words. Therefore, to receive a guest, either friend or foe, there is no expense. It is only a question of good manners. When Maharaj Parikshit entered the door of Shamika Rishi, he did not expect a royal reception by the Rishi, because he knew that saints and Rishis were not materially rich men. But he never expected that a seat of straw, a glass of water, and some sweet words would be denied to him. He was not an ordinary guest, nor was he an enemy of the Rishi, and therefore the cold reception by the Rishi astonished the king greatly. As a matter of fact, the king was right to get angry with the Rishi when he needed a glass of water very badly. To become angry in such grave situation was not unnatural for the king, but because the king himself was no less than a great saint, his becoming angry and taking action were astonishing. So it must be accepted that it was so ordained by the supreme will of the Lord. The king was a great devotee of the Lord, and the saint was also as good as the king. But by the will of the Lord, the circumstances were so created that they became ways to the king's becoming unattached to family connection and governmental activities, and thus becoming completely surrendered unto the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. The merciful Lord sometimes creates such awkward positions for the pure devotees in order to drag them towards himself from the mire of material existence. But outwardly, the situation appears to be frustrating to the devotees. The devotees of the Lord are always under the protection of the Lord, and in any condition, frustration or success, the Lord is the supreme guide for the devotees. The pure devotees therefore accept all conditions of frustration as blessing from the Lord. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmay Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovrittam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupah Kada Mayam Dadati Sa Padantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunathanvitam Tamsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sagana Lalita Shri Shakanvitamscha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Shri Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyayvacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama राम राम हरे हरे, हरे कृष्णा हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। सो हरे कृष्णा, वेल लाइक टू वेलकम एवरीबडी टू दिस प्रोग्राम श्रीमद् भागवतम क्लास। इट इज वंडरफुल दैट सो मेनी पीपल कैन असेंबल टू हियर भागवतम, दैट इटसेल्फ इज अ ब्लेसिंग इन दिस मॉडर्न एज कलि युग, बिकॉज नोबडी इज रियली इंटरेस्टेड इन हियरिंग कृष्ण कथा। एनीवे, दिस इज अ वेरी वंडरफुल वर्स फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम एंड इट टॉक्स अबाउट परीक्षित महाराज एंड ही इज मीटिंग विद शमीक ऋषि विद सम काइंड ऑफ डिसअपॉइंटिंग टाइप ऑफ सिचुएशन। सो एट द वेरी आउटसेट आई वुड लाइक टू एक्सप्रेस माय डीप सेंस ऑफ ग्रेटिट्यूड टू द टेम्पल अथॉरिटीज एंड स्पेशली रुद्रनाथ प्रभु फॉर गिविंग मी दिस अपॉर्चुनिटी टू सर्व। This verse which we have read is really very, very special. Not special because I am asked to speak on it. It is special on its own merits, because if we go through the verse and the purport, you understand how very great our Param Guru Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada was. Because each sentence or each aspect of the purport reveals his wisdom, reveals his spiritual heights. So therefore the verse is special. So very, now how many, if we go through the purport, you understand that there are several facets to it. Each one can be developed into a subject matter in itself. But let us see what are the salient features of what we read just now. The very first thing is that Srila Prabhupada has crystal clear understanding of what constitutes guest reception. Now, guest reception is something which you have, which you always do. But in fact, the purport is which Srila Prabhupada has given is nothing short of a guest reception manual. If you just expand what he has said, it constitutes a guest reception manual. How should a guest be received? How should he be treated? All that is very beautifully specified. This is one of the aspects of the purport. And then Prabhupada makes some very interesting points. He says that the atithi seva which we do is not linked to facilitation. It's not that you have wonderful facilities, therefore you know you are welcoming the guest and showing him reception. No, that is not the reason. What the atithya seva is based on consciousness and the qualities of the heart that we possess. That is what is required. So the poorest of the poor man, as Prabhupada writes in the purport, poorest of the poor man can also welcome an atithi, a guest who comes to his house. What does he have to do? He doesn't have to provide a very wonderful asana, cushioned asana, very comfortable Dunlop pillows, not all that. What he has to do is just, as it is mentioned, truna bhumi adir. All that he has to do is to offer the guest a straw, seat made of straw, grass. Now, that is not an expensive proposition, you have to give that. Then, he has to serve him a glass of water, which is available. Then he has to use sweet words to welcome the guest. So this can be done by any person. He doesn't have to be an aristocratic billionaire to offer this kind of an atithi. All that is required, all these three things. First of all, the consciousness of the person. We must be desperate to serve the guest. Whatever our facilities, whatever the amenities we have, some people may have great amenities and some others may have nothing, maybe living in a hut. Nevertheless, this guest reception is something which can be done by everybody with the then he has the right consciousness. So this is an important feature of Prabhupada's purport. Now, one thing that is very noticeable in the purport is that Srila Prabhupada does not in any way condemn Parikshit. He doesn't condemn Parikshit for having, misunderstood. We'll read about it later on, but he doesn't condemn Parikshit, but rather he understands his psychology. Why did Parikshit behave the way he did? That Prabhupada tries to understand from point of view of psychology. What is Parikshit Maharaj's psychology? He emphasizes that Parikshit Maharaj was a Chakravarti Samrat, had come back fatigued, tired, and then he enters the ashram of Samik Rishi, and he receives a cold reception. Rather, he doesn't get any reception, because at that point in time, the ashram is, there are no, the disciples of Samik Rishi, they are all gone out, including his son. Then all of them are busy with their own activities, and ashram is virtually vacant. And Parikshit Maharaj is fatigued beyond redemption. He is very tired and hungry. So desperate to get to drink little water. So he goes and sees a hermit, that is Samik Rishi, father of Sringi, who curses Parikshit later on. So he's sitting there and he is in a lotus posture. He is in a trance, he is in meditation, in trance. And he asks him, please give me a glass of water. But he is addressing somebody who is not hearing, because his consciousness is not there at all. He is totally absorbed in meditation. So he is not able to respond at all. So in that situation, it is mentioned that Parikshit Maharaj, for that he becomes angry. So that he gets irritated and angry. And Prabhupada says that it is okay, it is perfectly alright. His getting angry is justified. He is thirsty, tired, fatigued, he is Chakravarti Samrat, and there is no one to welcome. At least that is the perception that he has. But in his frenzy of, wanting to drink water, he doesn't notice that there is a sage, who is in trance and meditation, and he is not in a position to respond because he is not conscious of the externals at all. So when somebody is in deep meditation, one is not conscious of the externals, and therefore he is reacting the way he is doing. So Prabhupada finds an explanation for Parikshit Maharaj's behavior. Srila Prabhupada finds an explanation for the lack of response which Samik Rishi shows. Both, he justifies and shows. That is something very important. So Prabhupada makes a very interesting point. Receiving a guest, either friend or foe, there is no expense. And Prabhupada gives the example of Jarasandha, then Bhima, Krishna and Arjuna. The three of them went to Jarasandha's palace as virtually as hermits. But later on, things became clear that they have come for fight, not for any arms or any other thing. So eventually, as Prabhupada clarifies, that during the day, Bhima would fight with Jarasandha. That battle went on, I believe, for more than 3 weeks, something like that, every day. And during the night, all of them would gather together and, have friendly atmosphere. So Prabhupada makes a point, whether it is an enemy or a friend, you should welcome him. So that is the code of reception of guests. So Atithi Satkar is very, very important. So it's only a question of good manners, Prabhupada says. How the Supreme Lord intervenes in the life of his devotee is also discussed by Prabhupada in a beautiful way. We'll talk about it a little later. So with your kind permission, I would like to discuss a few examples of guest reception from Vedic, culture. The very first example that comes to my mind is that of Dashrath Maharaj. Now, Ram, Lakshman and Bharat and Shatrughan have grown up to be very handsome and very valorous, princes. So, Dashrath is obviously very proud of Lord Ram, very fond of him, very much attached to him, very, very fond of him. So he's sitting on his throne and thinking of, you know, maybe, you know, time has come and I should get these sons of mine married. He's thinking like that. So at that point in time, a messenger comes. Messenger comes and says to the king, "O king, there is an effulgent, you know, rishi waiting outside. His name is Vishwamitra." So as soon as Dashrath Maharaj hears that Vishwamitra has come, Dashrath Maharaj actually jumps up from his asana. He relinquishes his asana. He goes running to meet Vishwamitra Muni, the great sage. And along with him, there is also Vasishtha Muni. Both of them go and they receive Vishwamitra. So Vishwamitra is nicely escorted to the throne of Dashrath Maharaj, which he refuses. He sits on another asana. And then he is offered, you know, Pada Puja and all the usual you know, things, rituals which are done to welcome a sage, especially a guest. So he comes. And then Dashrath Maharaj says that, you know, my day is made today because you have come to Ayodhya. So my day is made. So I feel really honored. Please tell me, O sage, what can I do for you? What is the purpose of your visit? Now, long story. Vishwamitra straight away comes to the point. He says that, O king, I have come to take your son Ram with me. I want to take him to the forest region where we perform, you know, sacrifice every day, yajna every day. And our yajnas are being constantly disturbed by, you know, demonic people like Maricha, Subahu and others. They are coming and disturbing our yajna. So I want that Ram should come with me and he should, you know, kill those demoniac persons who are, you know, a source of disturbance in my performance of our performance of yajna. So as soon as Prabhu Ram, who had told Vishwamitra that you can have anything that you want, he's totally disturbed. He's almost on the threshold of fainting. So the question of separation from Ram really disturbs him. And then he says that he virtually faints, but then recovers. And then he says, he tells Vishwamitra that, oh sage, it's not necessary for Ram. He's still tender, you know. He's not yet exposed to, you know, real warfare and all that. So please don't take him away. If you so want, you know, I will come with my entire army and, you know, get rid of those forces which are disturbing you. So as soon as Vishwamitra hears this, he is on the verge of getting angry. His nostrils, you know, flare up. So he says that, then what do we do? So he says that, just now you said that you can ask for anything and I will give it to you. And now, you know, you are going back on your word. What is this? So to cut a long story short, he looks at Vasishtha very significantly and he says that, he tells Dashrath Maharaj, you talk to your guru Vasishtha Muni, he will explain to you, he will tell you. So Vasishtha Muni, he tells Dashrath that, you please do send Lord Ram with Vishwamitra. It is for his good and for good of humanity. You do send him. And then privately he tells Dashrath Maharaj that no harm is going to come to him. In fact, he will benefit from the, you know, interaction with Vishwamitra Muni. So you do send him. And to tell you the truth, Ram is none other than the incarnation of Lord Vishnu. So nobody can hurt him. So you be rest assured. So you send him. And with that kind of an assurance, so now Dashrath says, okay, I'll send. So Ram, he calls Ram. So Ram is being sent. At the same time, Lakshman, who cannot remain separate from Ram even for a moment, he also goes with him. So both of them go. And there is a lot of description in Ramayana about their experiences, which we won't go into. But eventually, after killing the demons and giving total satisfaction to Vishwamitra and the sages of the forest, Vishwamitra takes Lord Ram and Lakshman to Mithila, where the Swayamvar of Janaki, the daughter of Janak Maharaj, that is being, you know, planned, goes there. And as Ramayana unfolds itself, all the four brothers eventually get married. You know, the Prabhu Ram, he marries Sita Devi, and then we find that Janak Maharaj's second daughter, name is Urmila, she marries Lakshman. Then Janak Maharaj's brother is Kushadhwaja. His two daughters, you know, they marry, names are Mandavi and Shrutakirti. So they marry Bharat and Shatrughna. So what started with an angry posture from Vishwamitra culminates in joy for everybody. There are four wedding and wedding receptions. So everything turns up well. So we find therefore that our culture is one of, you know, peace and joy. It is not, you know, of creating strife. Unfortunately, the times we are living in is full of strife and tension. And even the politicians, you know, generate strife and tension. But this was not the situation. So this is one story I thought, you know, I would share with you. Then the second story which I would like to share with you is that of Bhishma Dev and Bhishma Dev's five arrows. There also we have a situation wherein an enemy, you know, is welcomed by Duryodhan. So we'll discuss this in little more detail because it is very interesting. So once during Mahabharata war, what happened was that Bhima was in person-to-person combat with Duryodhan. And Duryodhan gets very badly injured. He gets injured and he is bleeding and he's very, very unhappy. So he jumps into the chariot of Krupacharya, and Krupacharya escorts him back to the camp. So Duryodhana is mentally disturbed. He can't take the humiliation of, you know, being defeated by Bhima. He cannot take it in his stride. It is too much for him. Being defeated is one thing, but being defeated by Bhima is another. So he becomes very, very, you know, annoyed, and he goes. And he straight away, with all his wounds, he goes to Bhishma Dev. So he goes to Bhishma Dev, and after going to Bhishma Dev, Bhishma Dev attends to him. He sees that he is given the proper medication for the wounds, etc. And then Duryodhana, what he says is something which I would like to say. So he meets Bhishma and says, "O son of Ganga, Gangeya," he said, "my lord, you should be merciful to me. Slay the sons of Pandu, kill them. And make good your promise that you would slaughter the enemy. Make good your promise." So, and then Duryodhan, after saying these words, he pauses for some time and looks straight into the eyes of grandfather Bhishma Dev. Looks straight into the eyes of Bhishma Dev. And then he says something which really disturbs Bhishma Dev's composure. What does he say? He says, looking at Bhishma's eyes, he said that if you are not able to kill the Pandavas out of your compassion, though you have promised to kill the enemy, if you are not able to kill them out of compassion for them and out of, you know, hatred for me, then I have a suggestion to make. It's a long story, but synoptically, he says that if you cannot kill the Pandavas, at least, you know, you can step down from your being the general of the army. So when this is heard by Bhishma Dev, it's an insult which is unbearable for a Kshatriya warrior. And it is true, because Bhishma Dev had really exhausted himself, you know, during the war. He was doing his very best, but one thing or the other, with Supreme Lord Krishna being there at the beck and call of the Pandavas, some or the other, the Pandavas, he could not, you know, kill them or disturb them. So Bhishma Dev is very sensitive, and when Duryodhan insinuates that Bhishma Dev is not doing his best for Kauravas, he becomes very much perturbed, very much disturbed. He says that Duryodhan's, you know, words asking him to step down are like a dagger, you know, he's piercing Bhishma Dev with a dagger. So he's very, very, very upset, and he tells Duryodhan that how can you say such things? I have done my very best for the Kauravas. I have been on the verge of laying down my life for the army, and how come, you know, you are making such a statement? So, and if you think that you have support of warriors like Karna, because of whom you are making such a statement to me, that in my place will be taken by Karna, then you are absolutely in the wrong. He says that, you know, once, you know, when you were captured, that is Duryodhan was captured by Gandharvas, in Dvaitavan, at that time, where was Karna? Where were your supporters? It was Arjuna who saved you at that point in time. So why are you making such a fuss about my not doing my very best? I am doing my very best. And then Duryodhana is somewhat consoled, but then to further give confidence to Duryodhana, Bhishma does something extraordinary. He says, he bends down and he, from a silver quiver, he takes out, you know, 5 arrows. He takes these 5 arrows, he puts those 5 arrows on a silken cloth, puts them on the ground, silken cloth, and then he sits in meditation and meditates for a long time. Duryodhana is watching grandsire, you know, meditating. And after the meditation is over, Bhishma Dev says, don't worry. Now, here are these 5 arrows. If tonight you go and sleep well, tomorrow morning, you know, I will kill the 5 Pandavas with these 5 arrows. These 5 arrows have been empowered with ascetic, you know, power. So they will definitely, you know, kill the Pandavas. So just go and relax. Now, Duryodhana is somewhat consoled by Bhishma Dev's this statement. At least he is not so partial to the Pandavas that he doesn't want to kill them. So he's somewhat consoled. So at that time, Duryodhana says, he has no faith in Bhishma Dev. He says that you give these 5 arrows to me, I will keep them in my custody. And tomorrow, before the war commences, you know, I'll give these 5 arrows. Until that time, let these 5 arrows be with me. Tomorrow morning, I'll give it to you. So Bhishma Dev says, okay. He's not attached to the arrows. He says, okay, give me tomorrow. I'll do what I have to do. So the arrows are now with Duryodhan. And Duryodhan goes to his camp. Duryodhan goes to his camp and he is about to sleep. Here in Pandava's camp, Lord Krishna addresses Arjuna. He says, Arjun, you may not be aware, but Bhishma Dev has 5 arrows with which he wants to destroy you. If any one of you or 5 of you are destroyed, the war is over. So he wants to kill you with these 5 arrows. And as of now, these 5 arrows are not with Bhishma Dev himself. They are with Duryodhan. So go to Duryodhan. Go to Duryodhan. Now the day's war is over. It is night time. So you can go, because the culture at that time was that during the day there would be ferocious war between the enemies. But during the night they would act as friends. Even the soldiers would meet one another during the night time and have wonderful exchanges. So that is the culture. So you go to Duryodhan, you remind him of the fact that how you had saved him from that Gandharva when he was about to arrest you and take you away. So you remind So Arjuna says that you remind Krishna says you remind Duryodhan of the favor you had done to him in saving him from Gandharva. So and ask for a boon which he had promised you at that time, because the fact was that when the Pandavas were in their vanvas, you know, after losing in the game of chess, they were in vanvas. At that time, they were in all the time, you know, under pressure. So at that time, Duryodhan wants to create more pressure. So he goes with his army, with all his battalion, he goes, and he wants to cause disturbance to, or cause, you know, some kind of attention to the Pandavas, even when they are, you know, in vanvas. He wants to go. So he goes there. So at that point in time, Indradev, Arjuna is his son, he feels that, you know, I must do something. So he sends a powerful Gandharva, whose name is Chitrasen, he sends him to that place, and he goes there, and Duryodhan and all his army, they are camping there. So he has a ferocious fight with them, and he defeats Duryodhan and his army, and he captures Duryodhan, binds him with ropes, and, you know, he is about to take him back and punish him, take him back to Indra. But at that time, a messenger from Duryodhan's army, an old man, he goes running to Yudhishthir Maharaj and says, Yudhishthir Maharaj, your brothers are in distress. Duryodhan has been arrested by a Gandharva and he's in total distress. So you must do something about it. So Mahabharata describes that at that time Yudhishthir calls his brothers, all four brothers. Bhima says, if this fine work has been done by somebody, let it be, let him be captured, Duryodhan, that's what we want to do. But no, at that time Yudhishthir says that, you know, when we are fighting with the Kauravas, we are 5 and they are 100. But when we are fighting with a total another enemy, we are 105, so you have to fight together. Arjun, go use your Gandiva and, you know, defend your brothers and extricate them from the misery. So this is the generosity of Yudhishthir Maharaj. And accordingly, Arjun goes and single-handedly fights with the Gandharvas and his soldiers, and he virtually brings that Gandharva, he imprisons him, ties him with ropes, and Duryodhana is already tied in ropes by that Gandharva. Both of them come to Yudhishthir Maharaj. And Arjuna wants to know what to do with these two. What to do with the Gandharva and what to do with this Duryodhana who has been bound. At that time, Yudhishthir Maharaj says, release both of them. Yudhishthir Maharaj is Yudhishthir Maharaj. Dharmaraj says, release both of them. So both of them are released. Both of them are released from their captivity. And at that time, Duryodhan is so ashamed that, you know, he has been saved by Arjuna and the Pandavas, whom he wanted to disturb while they were in Ajnatvas, while they were in forest. So he is totally embarrassed. So, but he says that at that time, he says that, you know, ask, I will someday, you know, give you a boon. So Krishna now tells Arjuna, the time has come for asking for boon now. Now you go to Arjun, you go to Duryodhan's camp. So Arjuna agrees. Arjuna, he mounts a white horse and he's riding the horse, you know. He goes to the camp of Duryodhana. This is at night. And the soldiers, they are trained that they are not to, you know, fight with even an enemy during night time. So they welcome Arjuna. They escort Arjuna to the place where Duryodhana's chamber, and Duryodhana is about to sleep. That is the time the Arjuna goes there. And when Arjuna goes there, Duryodhan untypically welcomes him. He says that, oh, hero, what has brought you here? So Then he says that if you want your kingdom back without a war, I'll give it to you. Because this he says in a light-hearted way, he doesn't mean it. So I'll give the kingdom to you. Ask, why have you come here? There must be some reason why you have come at night. So Duryodhana is about to sleep actually. So at the time he goes. So there must be some reason why you have come. So at that time Arjun says that, he asks Arjun to sit near his bed where he is about to sleep. He sits there, makes him comfortable. So both are arch enemies but makes him very comfortable. And as Prabhupada writes here that how Jarasandha welcomed Bhima, Arjuna and Krishna. Similarly, Duryodhana welcomes Arjuna and then says, why have you come here? What is it that you want? I'll give whatever you want. At that time, Arjuna very gently reminds Duryodhana that, remember when we were in Dvaitavan, at that time, you know, you were captured by Chitrasena, the Gandharva, and you remember how at that point in time, you know, you were saved. So, at that time, I have come to ask for a boon. He says, Duryodhana says, what boon you want? He says that, I believe that you have 5 arrows with you. 5 arrows which Bhishma has given to you. I want them. Now, having promised Arjuna that anything that you want, I'll give. So, he cannot go back on his word. So, he takes those 5 arrows and gives it to, you know, Arjuna. And that way, Bhishma, he had promised to kill the Pandavas. So, he is no longer in a position to do that. Because by Krishna's protection, the arrows are with Arjuna. So, the Pandavas are saved. So, while Arjuna takes the arrows and wants to go back to his camp, Duryodhana asks him, by the way, who told you about these 5 arrows? But they are not come in newspapers that 5 arrows are with, you know, Duryodhana. So, who told you about it? He said, Krishna told me of their existence. That's why I have come. At that time, Duryodhana momentarily accepts that Krishna is a great personality, he knows everything that is happening. He says, what Bhishma Dev and Vidura are saying, they are not wrong, it seems. That's what he says. Then he goes back to his own ways, that is a different matter. So, we have an example of two, Duryodhana and arch enemy of Pandavas welcoming enemy. So, this is the culture which we had, Vedic culture which we had in our tradition. I'd like to give an example from the story of Ramanujacharya. So, once, you know, little away from Mahabharata and Ramayana, so Ramanujacharya, once with his disciples, he wanted to go to Shaila. Shaila is a Shailam, Sri Shailam, where there is a mountainous region where there is a temple of Lord Narayan. He wants to go there. And with his disciples, he wants to go. And they start walking. There are no helicopters or planes. They start walking from Sri Rangam towards Sri Shailam. While they are going, he and his disciples, they are chanting and, you know, doing kirtan and having a nice time. So, while walking, they come to a particular place. I'm trying to remember the name of the place. Ashtasahasram. Ashtasahasram is the place they come to. Now, Ashtasahasram was in between. It was in a halfway to their destination, Sri Shailam. So, they come to Ashtasahasram. And after reaching Ashtasahasram, it is night time. So, Ramanujacharya decides that they will camp for the night there in one of his disciples' house. and from then they will go proceed ahead. So when they are discussing, he says that I have two disciples in this place. Two of my disciples are in this, and one of the disciples' name is Yajnesh. Yajnesh is a very rich, you know, merchant, and there is Varadacharya, who lives with his wife. He's an extraordinary Vaishnava, but very poor. Poor means who earns his livelihood by, you know, doing, you know, everyday bhiksha, you know, so what they call madhukari. So by madhukari he earns his wealth, and the couple is extremely happy with each other. They are living a very simple life. So these are the two disciples. Of the two, you know, let us, all of us, let us go to the place of, you know, Yajnesh. He has got all the facilities, so he maybe can accommodate all of us. And the night we'll spend there, we'll go there, enjoy the hospitality. Night we'll spend, and then, you know, we will go further to our destination. So that is the way. So he sends his two of his disciples to Yajnesh. So the disciples go rushing, you know, they go to the Yajnesh's residence. He lives in a palatial place, all wonderful facilities he has. And he goes and tells Yajnesh that Guru Maharaj and your god brothers, they want to come to your house. So Guru Maharaj has specifically sent us to tell you this. So as soon as Yajnesh hears that Guru Maharaj, Ramanujacharya, with his disciples is going to come to their house, he becomes so excited that he starts making arrangements for welcoming Guru. In the meantime, these two devotees who had brought the message that Guru Maharaj is coming, they are standing completely neglected. They are not even offered an asana. They are not offered even a glass of water, nothing. They are just standing there. They wait and wait. And finally, they just quit the place and go back to the Guru. Guru Maharaj asks, what was your experience like? And very honestly, they say what their experience was. So, as soon as Guru Maharaj hears that, as soon as hears it, he says that, we drop the idea of going to Yajnesh. We'll not go. One who does not know how to treat, you know, Vaishnavas, you know, welcome Vaishnavas, I have nothing to do with them. We'll not go there. We'll drop the idea of going to Yajnesh's place. So then we will go to Varadacharya's house. So, and they, all of them, they go to Varadacharya's house. Now, Varadacharya's house, it has virtually no facilities. So when they go there, Varadacharya has, as usual, gone, you know, for madhukari, and he is not at home. So all of them go and reach his house. So at that time, his very dharma patni, Lakshmi Devi, she welcomes he welcomes Guru and asks them to come in, gives them water to wash their feet, and ask them to sit on some straw, you know, mat, and all of them are sitting there. And with very sweetly she tells them, see, all of you, please, there is a water reservoir nearby. You can go there, and all of you can have a bath. And after having your bath, you can after some time, you can come here. In the meantime, you know, I will offer. Bhoga to Lord Narayan, and then you can have prasad here. So come. So though they have zero facilities, she welcomes Ramanujacharya and his disciples. So of course it's a long story, I won't go into the details, but eventually, you know, Ramanujacharya prefers to go to devotees who know the etiquette of, you know, receiving guests. They know the etiquette, so they said, we'll go to that place. So there is
further story, but we won't go into that because it is a digression from the main theme. So, one may not have any facilities, but still one can welcome guests. The ultimate story that I would like to tell you is that of Srinivas Acharya. Srinivas Acharya, you know, he wanted to desperately hear Srimad Bhagavatam from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That doesn't work out. So he, wherever he goes, he meets with disappointment. And finally he goes and meets Janava Mata, who is at the time the leader of the Vaishnava community. So Janava Mata asks him, have you met, you know, Abhiram Thakur? He's a great Vaishnava. Have you met him? So Srinivas Acharya says, no, I have not met him. So go and meet him. So Srinivas Acharya goes to meet Abhiram Thakur. And as you probably, all of you know, Abhiram Thakur is a great Vaishnava. He had a unique way of, you know, dealing with other Vaishnavas. He had a whip chabuk called Jai Mangal. So he would, you know, check whether a person is real Vaishnava by whipping him. So, and if somebody tolerated the whip, you know, his Vaishnava bhakti would increase. So if somebody is a pretender, he would, you know, sometimes collapse. So this would happen with Abhiram Thakur and Jai Mangal. So Janava Mata tells Srinivas Acharya, you go and meet Abhiram Thakur. So she goes and meets, Srinivas Acharya meets Abhiram Thakur. Abhiram Thakur recognizes that he's a great devotee, so he embraces him. And then he says, Srinivas, you look very tired. So I will give you some Lakshmi. Take this Lakshmi and you buy things that are required for cooking a nice meal. You buy this and you go and stay in this particular jhopri, and here, you know, you can cook bhoga. So he gives money to him. And with that Lakshmi, he buys whatever bhoga samagri is required, that he takes and gives, goes to the market and buys everything and comes back. And then he cooks, he's famished, he's hungry like anything. But he cooks a meal, then he offers it to Lord Chaitanya on the altar, he offers it. And then he's about to, you know, partake of the prasad. At that time, you know, there is a knock. So as soon as there is a knock, he opens the door. There are four people, you know, four people who have come to meet. They come inside and they say that, you know, we are all famished, we are very hungry. Can you feed us? Now, Srinivas Acharya is such a wonderful Vaishnava. He says, yes, I will feed you. And he, you know, feeds all those four people, depriving himself of whatever he would have got in the meal. So he feeds all those four people. And those four people tell him, we have been sent here by Abhiram Thakur himself. He has sent us knowing that, you know, you have cooked a nice bhoga, and knowing that, you know, you have prepared a nice lunch. So he sent us here. So we have come here with that. So Srinivas Acharya, being a typical true Vaishnava, he is not upset that Abhiram Thakur has used this occasion, you know, to test me. So very lovingly and gratefully, you know, he offers prasad to all four of them. And then while going, they bless him. So at that time, you know, Abhiram Thakur, he comes there and he realizes that Srinivas Acharya has passed the test, you know, whichever test he wants. And out of joy, you know, he starts using the whip to beat him. And as Srinivas Acharya is being beaten, he goes into more and more ecstasy of Krishna prema. More and more he beats, more and more ecstasy. To such an extent that he is not able to hold himself, you know, he is uneasy, he is not able to stand. At that time, you know, Abhiram Thakur's wife, she comes here. She says, stop this. Is your intention to kill him? So he is in so much ecstasy now that if you beat him anymore, you know, you will meet with death. Stop this. And then Abhiram Thakur stops. So the moral is that even when he is famished, you know, beyond redemption, Srinivasacharya welcomes people whom he doesn't know. He opens the door to them and, you know, takes care of them. So this is the culture which we have, and this is the culture about which Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport. So a question that comes to our mind is that how come Parikshit Maharaj, you know, behaved the way he did? That is, he what happens later on, I will not go into it. I don't want to steal the thunder from some other speaker. But the way he deals with the Rishi Muni, he's so upset, so angry. So, and Parikshit Maharaj is not an ordinary personality. He's a pure devotee of the Lord, named as Vishnu Rath. So, why is it that, you know, Parikshit Maharaj becomes, you know, angry and he does some activities which will be described by future speakers? And he says that why this has happened? So the problem is that when this event takes place, when Parikshit Maharaj comes into the hut of what is his name? Rishi? Huh? Shamik Rishi. So when he comes to Shamik Rishi's ashram, he sees that Shamik Rishi is, you know, in deep trance. He asks him, give me water, I want to drink water, I'm thirsty. But Shamik Rishi is not responding because he's in trance. And Parikshit Maharaj is in such a frenzy that he's not able to recognize that he is not replying because, you know, he is in meditation, deep meditation. So, question or a doubt that may arise in our mind is that the self-same Parikshit Maharaj, when he was in the womb of his mother, Uttara, so Ashwatthama sends his, you know, Brahmastra, and that Brahmastra, the heat of the Brahmastra, it is so tormenting, you know, so tormenting. He tolerates that heat. He tolerates, then he's just in the form of an embryo, he tolerates that heat. And he, throughout his life, he has worshipped Lord Vishnu. And he's so virtuous, he's so pious, and he's so, such a wonderful devotee that he's referred to as Vishnu Rath, one who is always protected by Vishnu. Now, how come now Vishnu has not protected him from this situation? This question may arise in our minds. So, for that, Prabhupada writes a beautiful purport which I would have liked to read rather than speak about it. Very beautifully, Prabhupada explains how, in case of his pure devotees, sometimes the Lord Krishna intervenes in their, you know, activities. That intervention is beneficial for the devotee in the long run, though initially it may be problematic. So this is what is being said here. I'll read this. The king was a great devotee of the Lord, and the saint was also as good as the king. But by the will of the Lord, the circumstances were so created that they became the ways to kings becoming unattached to family connection and governmental activities, and thus becoming completely surrendered soul unto the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. So, very clearly Prabhupada spells out how the Lord can intervene in the lives of a pure devotee also. Sometimes when a pure devotee suffers, we start thinking, why this has happened to him? Why hasn't Krishna protected him? We start wondering. But here the answer is very nicely given, that the Lord intervenes in the life of a pure devotee to make him go back home, back to Godhead, in a speedier way than what would have normally happened. So he does that. So he intervenes in that way. Prabhupada writes here, the circumstances were so created that they became ways to kings becoming unattached to family. Because of that curse which he later on received, which you won't go into details, that Parikshit Maharaj, you know, surrendered everything, went to the bank of Ganges, and then heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadev Goswami, and within 7 days, he went back home, back to Godhead. So, by intervention of the Lord, these things happen in a speedier way than they would have normally happened. So this is the outcome of the Lord intervening. Why does the Lord intervene? He wants his pure devotee to be with him sooner than later. Otherwise, normally, you know, if things had gone in the normal way, Parikshit Maharaj was a wonderful devotee. He would have gone back home, back to Godhead. But the way the things happened, and the way the things happened, the world was, you know, given the benediction of Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam was, you know, actually narrated to him by Sukadeva Goswami. Srimad Bhagavatam was virtually born out of sacrifice of Parikshit Maharaj. No? He surrendered his life and finally this happened. So this is the intervention of Krishna in the life of Parikshit Maharaj. So similarly, the Lord may intervene in the lives of devotees, his pure devotees, and give them, you know, success in their endeavors much faster than what would have happened normally by intervening. So apparently those who are not in the know of things, those who are not knowing, they will say, why such a pure devotee of Parikshit? Why did he, you know, do the things that he did? Why did he, you know, get angry with the Shamik Rishi? Why this happened? Why that happened? Why was he cursed? All these questions may arise, but once we understand the Prabhupada's perspectives, which he has given very clearly in this purport, we can come to the conclusion that whatever Parikshit Maharaj did was not because he did it with his free will. There was intervention of the Supreme Lord in his performance of his activities. So I think I would conclude here. I don't know whether I have taken more time than I ought to have. Anyway, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gauda Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.